Browns fans, don't miss A Legacy Unleashed at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, celebrating the greatest and most iconic moments in franchise history. For a limited time, now through April 21st, fans can immerse themselves in the Browns' rich history and get up close and personal with legends like Ozzie Newsome, Josh Cribbs, Bernie Kosar, Eric Metcalf, and many others. A Legacy Unleashed, for a limited time at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Get your tickets at profootballhof.com today.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into a Wednesday edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. I am Ashley Bastock with Mary Kay Cabot, who has made her way back from Orlando in the owners' meetings. But we said it yesterday, we have so much still to get to outside of what Jimmy and Dee Haslam said about the Brown Stadium, about extensions for Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski. Of course, we haven't really talked about what Andrew Berry said much at all, so he's the big thing. But we wanted to start off with where we left off yesterday, and that is the NFL's first ever game in Brazil. We talked about it yesterday, but Mary Kay, we're still waiting as of Wednesday afternoon at 2:30 p.m. But as you talked about yesterday, as you reported, this announcement, whether it's going to be the Browns or the Packers facing the Eagles, could come as soon as tomorrow.
It could. It could come on Thursday. That was one of the things that was floating around there at the NFL meetings, that it could come as soon as Thursday. And then when we talked to Roger Goodell in the press conference yesterday afternoon, he said that it would be coming within a week, So sometime between now and probably next Wednesday, we will know if we are going to need those passports and if you're going to need that lovely photo that you got taken yesterday, Ashley, and we will find out if we are going to Brazil. And it's funny because the Browns really want this game. They really want to embrace the global nature of the NFL. I just can't help but think that this is going to be a very difficult trip and a game in which it's going to be, I think, hard to fly for 12 hours and then go try to beat the Eagles. But maybe the Browns also look at it like it's better to face the Eagles on the road, where it's a road game basically for both teams, than to have to go into Philly and try to beat them there. So maybe they're looking at it that way. And we all know that one game can make the difference between the playoffs or no playoffs.
So you've, I know, brought this up, and I tend to agree with you. There's also this idea that the Browns and the Eagles have worked really well together in recent years, and they've had joint practices at training camp the last 2 years, and Nick Sirianni and Kevin Stefanski are great friends. But tell me if I'm overblown in my thinking of this, because I just think the last month or so, I've been thinking about this. With this team, they had so many injuries last year to key players. I just wonder, ultimately, should that be a factor in their minds? Like, I know they want this game, but I've been thinking about it. It is a long trip, and it is kind of a lot out of your ordinary element. You don't have access to your usual facilities and even things like your own bed, of course, which players talk about. I know that 10-day Denver-LA trip last year started to get to them in that way, but I wonder, am I overblown in that thinking? Like, is it an actual concern, do you think, at this point to factor that in?
I don't think it's a concern to them, mm-hmm. but I think it should be a concern. I agree with you on that. I think it's going to be an enormous undertaking to pull off this trip. Plus, there are other considerations. I've heard people say that you would be confined to your hotel because of safety issues. This is not like players are going to be out and about experiencing all that Sao Paulo has to offer. I don't think it's going to be like that. I don't think it's going to be like, hey, bring your family. Let's party in Rio. I mean, that's really not what this is going to be all about. So, and then the other thing, the other factor, which I think is big, is the fact that this will be Deshaun Watson's first start if they play September 6th in Brazil. It'll be his first start coming off of his shoulder surgery, his first start since we saw him with that amazing second half comeback in Baltimore, 33-31 victory, 14 of 14 in the second half. He was just lights out on a high ankle sprain on what we came to find out was a fractured shoulder. So this would be his first start. And if I were managing the situation, I probably would take a lot of other variables out of the equation and just let him focus on doing what he has to do to be the best that he can be on that day, as opposed to all of the other distractions and all of the other possible quirks and foibles that could come along with being in Brazil.
I mean, there's so much too. And I even think about, you know, when we were hearing rumblings at the combine about this still being a possibility, obviously, it's also like, and I've thought about this more and more over the last month, this is the first time they are doing this trip, right? Like, London is a totally different thing at this point. They could do that in their sleep logistically. This is the very first time. There's going to be a ton of kinks that need to get worked out just from the league itself, logistically. And I wonder, at the end of the day, is that going to be worth it too?
I don't know. I would have serious, serious reservations about that. It seems to be at least somewhat of an unstable situation there, where you're going to have to be overly careful. You're going to be have to be overly vigilant about things. I would much prefer London and Ashley. If that happens, if the Cleveland Browns are playing the Jaguars in London this year, I will pay for you to go to London with me.
Mary Kay's been trying to get me to go to London for years. I need to go. This is also part of the reason for getting the passport. I have to go. We had a whole discussion about it at the Combine with Angelique Chingelis from the Detroit News. She also loves London. I need to go. It's overdue. I would much rather see that, even just from an Ashley standpoint. So no one cares about that but us. But
I love London. The last time I was there, which was 2 summers ago, I said, this is absolutely a place where if I had to pick somewhere in the world to spend, you know, a month or two, London would be very, very high on my list. I absolutely love London, and I know you would too.
All right. So again, we're still in a holding pattern with all this. We're still waiting. I know I did think really quickly that it was interesting. It seemed like Roger Goodell went out of his way almost to bring up the fact that the Packers have a really large following apparently in Brazil. I don't know how they measure that, how they go about measuring that. And, you know, it is interesting, I think, this balance of the Packers seemingly do not really want this trip. They're not as outwardly enthusiastic about it, at least, as the Browns have been, which we talked about yesterday. But I wonder at the end of the day if the NFL is going to say, too bad, there's a lot of Brazilians who over the last decade or so have gotten really into what's going on with the Green Bay Packers, and we're sending you guys down there.
I think so. I think if the league thinks it will be a better draw, a better game, more excitement, and more anticipation for those fans in Brazil, they will do what's right for the game, and they will let the Green Bay Packers just have to deal with it. Now, when I talked to a couple of Packers people yesterday, they had pretty good vibes about the Packers going on this trip. So it's just very interesting because, as we have mentioned, the Browns really want to go and the Packers really don't want to go. And we just don't know how it's going to turn out yet.
All right. So let's transition into Andrew Berry here and what he had to say the other day down in Orlando. And Mary Kay, I think the biggest topic for me, and we talked about it a little bit before you even heard from Andrew Berry, was Nick Chubb. And you guys got a chance to ask him about that. He gave, I think, the most intel we've gotten about Nick Chubb post surgeries in September and November.
Yes. And that is the fact that he's ready to take this next big step. He's going to start load running. And what that means is that he will do cutting and agility work and all of those kinds of things. Up to this point, he's really just been conditioning and trying to come back from not only the torn ACL surgery, but the surgery before that in September, which involved the MCL, the medial capsule, and the torn meniscus. So really, really major knee construction here. but he is almost ready to take it to the next level. And it was really interesting because Jimmy Haslam revealed a little nugget to us that I thought was pretty cool, where he said that Nick has been going in at 5 a.m. every morning and getting in the hyperbaric chamber. So he's using every modality he possibly can. And things are different even now than they were back in 2015 when he tore up that knee at Georgia. There are so many different ways to get well now. And even a torn ACL is a 9-month injury now compared to at least a 12-month injury even 5 years ago or 6 years ago. So the chances of him coming back are much better now than if this would have happened maybe 4 or 5 years ago. But still, it is not going to be easy. And even Jimmy Haslam was willing to acknowledge that.
Yeah, I thought that quote was really interesting, some nice color in terms of Nick's rehab. But I also thought, because of the big question, and we've talked about it, is he going to be ready for the season? And I know we kind of agreed that between him and Deshaun, people were a bit cagier about Nick's status, and that was understandable given the prior reconstruction and the extensiveness of his surgery. But Andrew basically said these next 3 months, when he enters this new stage, are going to be pretty telling.
Absolutely. These next 3 months will determine when they believe that Nick will be ready to start playing some football. And I don't think he's going to be ready for the start of the season. I would be very surprised if he is ready to go, let's say, September 6th in Brazil, just for fun. I just don't see how he could be ready for that. That would only be about 10 months after the ACL surgery. And once again, not just the ACL surgery, but everything else going on in that knee. If he is able to do that, he's even more of a superhero and more of a freak of nature than we know him to be. And I will just be absolutely amazed if he can do it. I'm pulling for him to do it. I know you are. I know everybody is. I hope he can do it. But it will be a Herculean effort if he can pull it off.
I did also think it was interesting that Andrew kind of distinguished some of these other running back moves they had made in this offseason, though, because I know the speculation was, oh, were they going out and getting all of these guys like Dante Foreman and Nyheim Hines because of Chubb's status? Is that telling us something about Nick? But he kind of went out of his way and detailed the roles for those guys, at least how they're envisioning them now. And, you know, he said Dante does a lot of what Kareem Hunt did for them, for example, and that Hines, of course, something we assumed they really value for his return ability. So he just kind of stressed, like, hey, we've typically gone into camp with 6 or 7 of these guys on the roster.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the Foreman nugget was very helpful because I think a lot of people thought, oh, why are they going out and getting Foreman? What does this mean about Jerome Ford? And what does this mean about Nick Chubb? Well, all it means is they need that style of back that Kareem was. Kareem did a lot for them last year, including rushing for 9 touchdowns. So he caught the ball out of the backfield. He blocked. He lined up in different places. He was a valuable piece for them, and they needed to replace that. So, yes, they always go in to camp with about 6 or 7 running backs. They're going to do that again, and nothing should be read into that. Having said that, if Nick is not ready, when you have a combination of the guys they have now, let's just say that you have those 4. Let's say you have Jerome Ford, Pierre Strong, who I think we all tend to forget about a little bit, right? And then Nyheim Hines and Dante Foreman. If you have those guys, you're going to be able to accomplish your running game. The Browns finished 12th in the NFL in rushing last year without Nick Chubb and, I might add, without their 2 starting offensive tackles. So you're going to have your tackles back, and then you're going to have Jerome Ford with a full year of starting under his belt. You're going to have Pierre Strong, who now will have his sea legs in Cleveland and in the Browns offense. You're going to have a couple of new guys that will be able to add some things. And then you have a brand new running backs coach in Deuce Staley, who's going to infuse some new energy and new life into the program. And they have a running game coordinator who is also new in Nick Charlton. So I do think that it's going to be a new day in the running back room. It's a very new day, and they're going to get the job done. And no one needs to panic if Nick isn't ready right away. He deserves all the time that he needs, and he will get it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been curious about this idea that it's a new day for that position group, because it really is. I wrote about it a little bit in some takeaways last week from this first stage of free agency. Tried to ask Kevin about it at the combine, didn't really get an answer. I mean, he kind of took it as an opportunity to praise Deuce Staley, but it's just going to be so different, especially in this early stage of the offseason when you don't have Nick out there. Because we know Nick would typically be at everything. He's going to get a bunch of reps that he wants. They're not going to have that luxury this offseason, and it's not Stump Mitchell anymore. So it is Deuce. It is a new voice. Like, what are the day-to-day machinations in that room going to be? These are things we don't know that they probably don't even fully know yet until they get players there.
Yes, and I think the important thing to note is, even though it's such a passing league and everyone is just all about the pass, and we know that the Browns are going to really emphasize the pass, they're going to play a lot of three wides, it's still Cleveland. It is still the AFC North. You still need a running game, a robust, strong running game. And when you look around the rest of the AFC North, that's what you see going on there too. King Henry is over in Baltimore now, right? The Cincinnati Bengals traded away Joe Mixon, and now they have another really good running back there in Zach Moss. So the run is not a dinosaur. The run has, I think, new life in some ways, and it supports the passing game. And I think they will really, really use it here effectively again, even though they are overhauling the whole offense, basically.
All right, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk a little more Andrew Berry at the owners' meetings, what he had to say about Amari Cooper, the new trade deadline that just passed, and, of course, Deshaun Watson.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And welcome back to this Wednesday edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Almost said Thursday. Mary Kay and I were talking about not really having any idea about what day it is right now. She has more of an excuse because she traveled and had some, quite frankly, travel nightmares getting to Orlando. So I don't blame you for not knowing what day it was. I don't have an excuse. I think I'm just riding your coattails here.
Well, that's okay, because it is really hard in the off season. We are so used to the structure of the season, right? Everything has its rhythm during the season. You know exactly what day it is. You know it's coordinator day. You know it's quarterback day. You know it's game day. You know it's Saturday. You know what I mean? Like, you just know what you're doing. And in the off season, I think all NFL writers probably struggle a little bit with just that lack of structure.
True.
I do better with structure. I don't know about you.
Me too, yes.
I do much better with structure.
100%. I mean, one of those structure things, of course, is that, you know, Amari Cooper would typically talk on Thursdays, which today is not Thursday. But Andrew Berry had some stuff to say about the Browns' number one wide receiver. And Mary Kay, it seemed like he was hinting that Amari Cooper, they want him here for a bit longer.
Yes. You know, when I went back and I looked at that quote and really read that quote about Amari Cooper, because sometimes when you're in these interviews, it's a small group setting, and we were with five reporters that cover the Browns at a table with Andrew Berry and Peter John Baptiste, the Browns PR director. And you don't necessarily process everything in the moment, and you have to think about it, and you have to transcribe it, and you have to listen to it again and let it sink in. And after I went back and I was looking it over a little bit, I realized that he really gave Amari a really nice vote of confidence and almost said in so many words that they do want to extend Amari. Now, I don't know for sure if this is going to happen, but it seems to me that at least the vibe is there for wanting to do something like that. And you've got other things that you can do. But if you know that you, and what I mean by that is franchise tag or whatever, but if you know that you feel this way about a player, why not go ahead and do it and get him wrapped up? And then you can also lower his cap number for this year, which enables you to do some other things. So if they need to borrow from Peter to pay Paul, they can do that. They can dig into Deshaun's contract to try to come up with something for Amari or whatever. They're really good at moving around the money. And it seems to me, with what he said about Amari, and I could pull up the quote unless you can do it faster than I can, and just maybe we should read a few snippets of the Andrew Berry quote. Do you want me to grab it?
No, I have it pulled up. You want the quote about, he said, about Amari. He said, look, Coop's a Pro Bowl caliber receiver. He's played really well for us the past 2 years. He's a strong presence in the locker room. We love him. So players like that, you want to make sure that you can retain as long as possible. And we'll work through all of that at the appropriate times.
Does that sound like extension to you? It sounded like extension to me. I mean, hopefully I didn't, that I'm not overstating it. But it sounds to me, when you say, we love him, we want him around, he's a great locker room presence. Now, the drawback is that he's turning 30 in June, but he has shown no signs of slowing down yet. I would get him under contract as soon as possible.
There was another quote that I wanted to read because I did think it was really interesting, because I think this is like one of the first times Andrew has so plainly talked about, hey, we want to be ahead of the market in these things. And he was talking about Jerry Jeudy here, and we can talk about more of what he said about Jerry. But he said, quote, probably by week one of the NFL season, the top of the receiver market's going to be north of $30 million. So as we think of the contract management space, rather than be reactive to new market dynamics, we try to be proactive. Probably more importantly, when we think about an extension or a signing, we think about where is the market going to be on September 1st as opposed to March 1st. And I know you put in your story, an extension for Amari might not come before the draft, but they're not held to this spring deadline with things like this.
No. And the truth of the matter is, Andrew's right about that. The market is going to change dramatically over the next few months because you are going to see CeeDee Lamb and Justin Jefferson and some of these great receivers from Jerry Jeudy's 2020 class getting paid. And to think about it, to think about the fact that 30 is going to be the number for receivers. Wow. I mean, that's pretty incredible. So to have receivers making that kind of money, they did really well for themselves in wrapping Jerry Jeudy up to a contract that pays him about $16.25 million a year over the next 4 years, including this year. There are many different ways that you can look at a contract, but the number that everyone uses in terms of trying to compare apples to apples is the yearly average. And the yearly average, for all intents and purposes, for Jerry Jeudy is about $16.25 million over 4 years. Now, that might sound like a lot for a player who's never had a 1,000-yard season, but I think they really believe that he will end up having 1,000-yard seasons here with Deshaun Watson. As far as Amari Cooper is concerned, I think Amari probably recognizes that 30 probably isn't going to be his number. Because he is almost 30, you're not going to pay him necessarily what you're going to pay CeeDee Lamb or Justin Jefferson or even Tyreek Hill. So I just don't think it's going to get to that number. But I do think that they will reward Amari Cooper for his tremendous service so far, for his leadership, for his mentorship. We know that Jerry Jeudy really looks up to him. I think that's going to come in handy over the next couple of years. He's the leader of that receiver room, the undisputed leader of the receiver room. And I think that they want to keep that going for a while.
And the other guy in the mix in all of this, of course, is Elijah Moore. He's now their number three receiver behind Amari and Jerry, but he's heading into the final year of his contract, Mary Kay, $3.116 million for him this year. And that's another guy. It just kind of remains to be seen what they're going to do there.
Yes. And I think he might be one of those guys where you let the season get underway a little bit, see how it's going, and see if what you think is going to happen actually happens. And that is that Elijah Moore flourishes and thrives with a healthy Deshaun Watson. And if it turns out that way and he does some of these cool things and plays some of these roles that you think that he can play, and all of a sudden, before you know it, he's a 1,000-yard receiver or on his way to that, then perhaps around the trade deadline, halfway into the season, you reward him with an extension too. So these are some of the things that they can do. They don't have a sense of urgency. Again, even with Amari, you can take your time a little bit. But I do think that from a vibe standpoint, vibe check, from a vibe standpoint, they should probably try to get Amari done sooner than later to just give him that vote of confidence heading into the season.
Yeah, I think if they want him around, to me, it's not worth dragging out. Like, he doesn't need to prove anything more here. The way he produced, regardless of who has been throwing him the football the last 2 years, is impressive. And like you said, he's a leader in that room. They have a bunch of younger guys in that room. I think if Jerry Jeudy is going to be successful here, which they obviously believe, Amari Cooper is going to be a big reason why. He hasn't had that same kind of mentor yet in his career. Those guys have a relationship that goes back years at this point. Of course, the Alabama connection, all those things I think are going to be really important. And you gave Jerry an extension to be here the next 4 years, basically.
Yes. So I think it just kind of jives with that. And it just feels like the right thing to do. And as I read that quote from Andrew Berry 2 or 3 times, I thought, okay, that's what he's trying to say here.
Yeah.
So let's roll with it. I thought it was important to illuminate that and shed some light on it and let people know what he was thinking in that regard. Because again, even though I don't think it will happen before the draft, it's got to be on the table and up for discussion.
Well, you said something about a healthy Deshaun Watson 2 answers ago, I think it is. So you're going to be writing about what Andrew Berry said about Deshaun Watson. This is going to be news to me a little bit too, since I didn't hear Andrew Berry talk. So what came out of his availability in terms of their quarterback?
Well, I think if you remember, I wrote a couple of days ago that when I asked point blank Kevin Stefanski, will Deshaun be ready for the season? He would not answer that. But I surmised at that time that I thought that that Andrew would be a little bit more optimistic about that. And I do think that when we talked to the Haslams and when we talked to Andrew Berry, they really did emphasize the fact that things are going so well with Deshaun's recovery that they really don't have any concerns. They do not have any qualms or reservations about the fact that he should be ready for the season. Nobody can make any guarantees, but it seems like he's in such a good spot and he's doing so well in his rehab that it should go off without a hitch and he should start throwing in the offseason program and he should be the starter on day one in September, wherever that may be.
I'm still, even like hearing that and hearing what they had to say, I just still can't help but think about the unprecedented nature of this particular injury. And I think this is better than the alternative, right? Which would be them coming right out and saying, oh, he's progressing a little slower than we want. He doesn't want to try throwing yet, that sort of stuff. But I just keep thinking about this is in his throwing shoulder. It's a fracture that is pretty rare in general, but we haven't been able to find, they haven't been able to find another quarterback that has had this. So I do think it is really interesting that they're even being this optimistic. I know they're keeping it kind of broad, but I still am just myself wondering, hey, how feasible is this going to actually be for Deshaun to pull off?
Well, I think that's the goal and that's the aim. And just like with Nick, everybody's pulling for Deshaun to come back healthy from this surgery and be everything that he can be as soon as he can be. But we just don't know. We just don't know. The reviews were good. Joe Sheehan went out there, the Browns head trainer, and supervised the throwing sessions last week at UCLA. The reviews from Joe Sheehan were very good. What they see him doing in terms of strength and agility and range of motion and all of those kinds of things with the shoulder, they feel really good about that. They are, of course, in constant contact with Deshaun's surgeon, Dr. Neil Elitrosh from Los Angeles. They're working in concert with him on everything. And as of right now, everybody feels good about everything. So barring any setbacks, I'm going to say he will start the opener.
All right, the other big topic I know we wanted to hit on from Andrew, something we talked about a lot at the Combine because that's where it first came up, and it's the Browns' proposal that they had to move the trade deadline back 2 weeks. They sort of got their wish. It wasn't the exact wish they wanted because their proposal was not adopted, but what was adopted was actually the Steelers' proposal to push the trade deadline back 1 week after week 9 games. So that would be once week 9 is completed, that Tuesday, pushed back 1 week. And Andrew talked about extensively at the Combine his reasoning for wanting to do this, that the league basically never corrected when they added a 17th game. And I thought some of the quotes I've read from him on this were some of the most impassioned quotes I've ever seen for Andrew Berry. Like, he truly, truly believes this deadline needed to be pushed back. He believed it needed to be back pushed back 2 weeks. But my sense was like, okay, at least we got something. There was some compromise here that was reached.
Yes. And I think it was smart. I don't know if these teams worked together to say, let's have a backup plan. If 2 weeks feels like too much for teams to pass right now, let's have a backup plan. Let's have a compromise at one. So that's how that may have gone down. And good for the Browns and everybody else that they were at least able to get something out of it. And maybe down the road they can get another week out of it. But it makes so much sense when you think about it. And Andrew did talk about the fact that, you know, when you look at the other leagues and how they do their trade deadlines, the NFL just, they were not giving teams enough time to do what they needed to do before that long stretch before playoffs and postseason to make things right or to decide if you could unload someone or add someone. And now at least they'll have another week. And it's important for the Browns because Andrew Berry does like to wheel and deal. He definitely loves to do that. Some of his best moves have come via trade, and I think we're going to continue to see that throughout his regime.
I mean, I think, and maybe it's just because Andrew is the first one that I heard kind of extensively explain this proposal, obviously, when we were at the Combine. But he made some really good points for why it should be pushed back 2 weeks. I know the one that really stuck with me is that it's been years since teams have even been mathematically eliminated from the playoff hunt until week 11. I know he said that across the league, you know, there are teams, there are some owners that are just resistant to change. But it also seemed like there was this fear of if you push it back 2 weeks that there was this catastrophizing of, oh, it might be more aggressive than it actually is, that you would have these haves and have-nots, was his quote, that it would become a sort of quote-unquote football apocalypse. And it's hard for me to see that playing out, but I mean, Mary Kay, is this kind of par for the course in the NFL when you have a proposal like this, that there is just a lot of resistance to any kind of change in the calendar?
Yes, there's resistance to change and angst over what the ramifications could possibly be. And it's the same thing when they change a rule in the NFL. Everybody freaks out, right? Everybody freaks out because nobody knows how that's all going to go, and it's going to ruin the game, and it's going to change this, and the sky is falling and all of that. So I do think that a lot of that sort of mentality goes on in the NFL. But I think this will be absolutely fine. I think 2 weeks would have been fine. I think they should have done the 2 weeks, but they can come back and try to get that another year.
That's kind of how I am. I'm like, I just think about the trade deadline and I'm like, it's so boring. Like, it just has been so boring. And I think a lot of the time it's because of what Andrew Berry is saying, that teams just aren't far enough into their schedule to truly know how the postseason is going to look, what they might still need. Maybe some injuries haven't happened yet that are going to impact them. So yeah, I don't mind this at all. I think I would have liked to see it pushed back 2 weeks, but like you said, it's probably going to be fine. Everyone just has to catastrophize everything.
Well, the thing is, teams can go on a really good run at the end of a season, and things can change drastically for a team. So it's a little early, after week 8 to say, oh, we're out of it. We should start throwing deck chairs off the Titanic here, right? They needed some more time to figure out, okay, are we going this season and where aren't we going?
All right. We're going to let Mary Kay go. She still has some stories to write here from the NFL owners meetings, even though she is back at home now. So check out all of that coverage over at cleveland.com/Browns. That's also where you can become one of our football insiders, get texts from us, get a newsletter in your inbox every morning that doesn't appear anywhere else on cleveland.com. Check out Mary Kay's videos that she produced from down in Orlando over at our YouTube page. That's Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com. You can also check out our Instagram that Dan, again, runs so devotedly. It's Orange and Brown Talk over on Instagram if you want to go and find that. And we'll be back with another pod tomorrow, perhaps a Hey MK pod. We have to discuss that. But again, our football insiders are the ones who get to ask Mary Kay all their questions for those. So be sure to check that out. All right, Mary Kay, I will talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds great.